Earners, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, that's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait, don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL is still in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah.
Enjoying our time out here. And this is a very special episode for a few different reasons.
Long overdue.
Yes, yes, yes. So, Daryl Freeman.
Yes, really nice to me.
Daryl Freeman Sr. This is going to be an interesting conversation because, so if you're loyal listeners of Earn Your Leisure, you know that we interviewed Slim and Husky.
Shout out to the boys, EJ, Clint.
Shout out to the whole team.
Love
So those guys have a unique pizza operation that they're running, and they're from Nashville, Tennessee, but now they have a shop in Memphis. They have a couple shops in Atlanta. They just opened in Sacramento.
Yep.
Shop, and then we were talking about, you know, that they're more than just restaurateurs. They have the real estate play behind it and all of that. So when we did the episode, I guess one of the guys must have forwarded to Mr. Mr. Freeman, and turns out that he's actually one of their mentors and business partners. I just learned as well. So that started the conversation of like, yo, y'all should interview him.
Then Mo was like, he's the OG.
I'm like,
okay.
So it's like, all right. So keeping in the Nashville, we've interviewed a few people from Nashville now.
We got a head out there.
We got Snoop.
Why don't we pack it up right now? Go to the plane.
Part two. Part two. Yeah. Part two.
You want to talk about first. So this is the first time somebody's flew in to the interview. Commercial. Like literally like, hey, I'm leaving Tennessee with my plane to fly to Atlanta right now.
He did.
That's a first.
He did. He flew himself private plane to the airport, did the interview, and then he's going Ferrari shopping. So
might be a B-roll for this.
Daryl Freeman Sr. So serial entrepreneur, founder of Zicon.
Zicon.
Computer services, and it's an IT company he actually sold to BG Staffing. Now, he started in 1991, sold it in 2017 for $23
million.
$23 million.
Let me break it down for you.
Okay.
$19 million cash.
Okay.
$1 million of their stock and a $3 million earnout.
Okay.
It came to $23 million.
$23 million.
It had $2,000 in it.
That you started with.
Yeah.
That's a good rate of return.
I know, there's a stockbroker here somewhere that put those numbers in.
Don't let that go over
your head. Please don't. Please don't.
He's also the co-founder of Reliant Bank. He is a real estate investor, big time real estate investor. He is the co-founder of Pinnacle Construction
Partners.
He also is the chairman of S3 Asset.
Recycling
Solutions Company. Anything I'm missing, Troy?
He has a $2
$2 general.
He completed 10 Ironman races.
Yes.
I mean.
And he's stock investor. So
I think we got it all.
I'm trying not to hit the table.
His reputation precedes itself. So first and foremost,
thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining. I was just about to say thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. So let's jump right into it because this is an interesting conversation. I was telling you, we've never had anybody that has sold their business. We've had a couple people that's been offered, buyouts, but they haven't taken it. So you've actually built a business and then you sold the business, and now you're in the process of actually helping other people and teaching them that game, right? So can you walk us through that first process? Because it's a long process from 1991 to 2017. Yeah. It's a long process. But what was that steps into building that business and then selling that business?
So I started the company in an office the size of a closet with $2,000 in savings, my wife's credit cards. I'm still married to her.
Congrats.
Lost a couple of those credit cards along the way, but we got them back. It went from one person to about 300 people. And the main things when you're building a business, you want to build stability. You want to get customers with long-term contracts. You want to create a history of performance. And you want to build a business around people, not around yourselves, around yourself. And so what happens most of the times is the entrepreneur builds the business around his or herself. And so I built the business from 1991 to somewhere in 2006 or seven. I built it from 10,000 in sales to about 16 million in sales. But I recognized that I couldn't take it any further because I didn't have the skill set. Oftentimes, entrepreneurs are the CEOs because they started the company, but they're really not qualified to be the CEO. So I really wasn't qualified to be the CEO, but since I owned all the stock, I was the CEO. But I recognized one day when I built this team of great people and the sales were stagnant for a couple of years, I recognized it wasn't the people that I built around me, that it was me that was the problem. Mm. And so I fired myself. So in building a business, don't build it around yourself. Build it around people. Long-term contracts, build it around people, establish long streams of revenue. So I fired myself and I hired a CEO of a company that was one of our competitors. And he had been with a company that had gone from zero to over 100 million. And so I offered him the president and CEO role at my company. And so now you got this nice little package that is not built around you that people are starting to look at to say, man, I could buy that team and that company. It's not Daryl Freeman. It's actually a company that stands on its own. So he took it from 16 million to about 40 million.
A year?
A year.
Oh, okay.
16 million a year in revenue to about 40 million a year in revenue. Our conversations would go like this. I would say, why don't we try this? I was the chairman. He would say back to me, when I tried that at the other company, this is what happened. So he came to the table with a bunch of experience, right? And so I built a company around people, got long-term contracts. I had an outstanding accounting department because you need to have numbers. They need to be numbers that are, all your T's be crossed, all your I's need to be dotted, Every year, even though I didn't have to, I got a certified audit. I got all our numbers audited every year. And so when we got to about 40 million, we got to 40 million, but we couldn't get any higher. And I recognized at that time, I had the $40 million team. I didn't have the $100 million team.
It is.
Before, when I was leading it, I had the $16 million team. But for me to go from the $40 million team to the $100 million team, which was my goal, I would need to replace those team members. But those team members were like family to me. And so I decided at that point, as opposed to bringing in a whole new team, that it was time to sell. It was time to exit. And it was a perfect point because many of our contracts were at their beginning stages where they had the most value. And we had a long history of stable customers that we had built. And we had built, even though I'm an African American, I did not build a black company. I built a quality company. And so when you do that in the marketplace and you create cash flow and consistent EBITDA, people recognize green. So I approached a banker here in Atlanta and said, we're interested in selling. And we talked about the business and what it needs and you know what needs to change in the business, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, hey, I can make those adjustments. And so we put the business, we went through a process with the banker. Now, choosing a banker that's a very important decision because you want to choose the best banker for your industry. So I chose the best banker for the information technology staffing industry, a banker that was selling two or three businesses a month. I mean, they knew who the buyers were. They knew who would be interested. They knew how my business should look. And so
how does that search process work, right? Like, if I'm a person that has, I want to sell the company, how do I know, like, this is the best person in the industry? Like,
so what? I interviewed him.
Okay.
Yeah, I interviewed him. So I wanted to see who was the best in the business. So I called a couple of VC funds, VC people, and they said, well, if we're buying a company, we normally will buy it from here. And so we found a guy by the name of Alan Bugler, Child's Advisor here in Atlanta. He was terrific. I mean, we put the package together. He brought the players, the potential buyers to the table. And we met with them, had drinks with them, talked with them. The first offer was like $14 million. And I said, guys, here's the other thing. You got to know what your value is. I knew that wasn't the number.
You walked in with it in your mindset.
So how do you value, because all right, so if the company is making $40 million, a year.
Gross.
Right. Yes. So how did you decide? Because I always heard this like was it 10 times the net that you're bringing in? Is that like a rough hand?
No. So it varies by industry. So in the staffing business at that time, businesses were selling for anywhere from 5 to 7 times EBITDA. And
what's EBITDA?
Income before taxes, interest, depreciation, and some other.
That was an acronym. Okay.
It's an acronym.
Okay. All right, gotcha.
So where they kind of level out, you know, what the business is worth if you take out what you paid in taxes, what you paid out in depreciation, what you paid out, I think I said taxes, what you paid out in interest. And so it kind of puts the business on a level playing field. So you strip all those things out and find out what the actual cash flow of the business is. And so in our business, I sold it for about 5-6 times EBITDA. And so that's what it was. That's what a lot of business was selling for. Now, I am now in the recycling business, information technology recycling business. The multiple for EBITDA, sales for EBITDA in this business is 8 to 14 times. So it has a chance to be way more valuable than the first one. And so that's how you determine what your EBITDA is, and then you know in the marketplace what it trades at. And one way you can do that is you can go to the stock market and find an IT company. You look at their stock and see what it's trading at, the market cap, and then you look at their EBITDA, and then you can calculate the multiple from that. Okay. Because what the market cap is what the company's selling at.
So you sold, all right, so five times what you were kind of bringing in net.
Without EBITDA.
EBITDA. But yes. For layman terms, kind of similar to net.
Similar to net, but.
So you knew you had that $20 million number. So when they came at 14, the first offer, what was your response?
Like, no.
but was it a negotiation or was it just like flat out?
No, it
like,
was a flat out no.
I'm good, okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
And how many other offers came before that $20 million?
The offers came in different ranges. And so sometimes people, they may offer you that. They may say, well, hey, we'll give you $14 million cash. We'll give you $4 million of our stock and another $4 million in earnout. So all I cared about was cash. Because if I took your stock and it didn't do anything, and if your stock is private, it's worthless to me.
Right.
Right? And if I took $4 million in earnout, earnout means I got to perform for a certain period of time to get that. Well, I didn't want that. I wanted the majority of the sale to be cash. Mm-hmm. And so.
So
19 million cash and $1 million of stock that was publicly traded that actually doubled when I had it. So.
And then what was the $3 million?
Yeah, the
earnout.
Yeah, that's the part I'm thinking about. The earnout part, are you still working? You sell the company, but you're still working and you have like things you need to meet, goals you need to meet to reach the $3 million? So how does that work?
Now I'm going to take you back to when I fired myself.
Okay.
And hired the person. The earnout, so it was $19 million cash on April 3rd and $1 million stock. Then a $3 million earnout that was over a two-year period based on the company's performance, right?
Right.
And so since I had a team in place, I didn't have to go and do that performance.
Right, because
we had a team in place that was running the company. And when BG Staffing bought my company, I explained to them that I had a CEO and a great management team and that they ran the company, that I didn't. And so they put some targets out there for us to hit, for the team to hit, get to the $3 million.
You're right. I have the $100 million team. Definitely going to hit these numbers.
They hit the numbers. I got the $3 million. Now, what I also did when I sold the company, there was a group of people that had been with me for a long time.
I was going to ask about that.
They've been with me for a long time. And I had a good friend of mine who started the company with me back in 1991 who had retired whole bunch of years back. And so I called them all into a room and I said, you all have been with me for a long time. I just got the wire. And I said, here's a check for you, a check for you, a check for you. Big checks that they ain't never seen before. And then one individual had two small kids. And I said to him, I said, I know why you're working, because my age. Know why you're working. You got two small kids. You're working because college fund, et cetera, et cetera. I said, what I want you to do is you go home to your wife and you find out from her what it's going to take to send your two kids to college. These kids were 8-10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You go home and find out what it's going to take to send them to college. You come back tomorrow and let me know what that number is. He went home. He came back, told me what the number was. I told my CFO, go in his office, cut the check for that number. When you build a business around people, you got to take care of your people. And you got to realize that the people that are on your team, they are the ones that make the company valuable. It's not you. So you see a bunch of companies today where they built the companies around themselves. You can't grow that way. When everything has to flow through you, mm-hmm. It's hard to grow. And it's not, you're not building value, because if you want to go sell it, they know that if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, the party's over. But if you build a team, that has value.
Yeah. Can we go back just for a second? Because I'm thinking, and I guess in 2012 when you decided, like, in order for this company to grow, I need to step back, I need to find myself. What's that process like? Is it like you have to, like, weigh these things in the mirror, or is like, because I would imagine this is like an ego check or it's a humbling experience. Like,
yeah, man,
what was
see,
that
that's the other thing, man. You don't need to have an ego as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have confidence but you don't need to have an ego. So I knew, now mind you, at $16 million a year, I had a great lifestyle. I had a plane, but it wasn't, I mean, I had a little plane. It wasn't the plane I got now, but I had a little plane.
I was thinking like I had a car, but okay.
But it was a comfortable lifestyle. But for the people around me to grow and to develop, I needed to grow that company to help them grow and develop. You follow what I'm saying?
Got you.
You know, people that have been with you for 10 years, one started out as a junior accountant. For me to need a CFO, I need to grow that company so she could grow into that role. And so growing the company for me was more so about the people than the money. When I sold the company, now I told you I started with $2,000 in savings. My payroll was $1 million every 2 weeks.
In 91?
No.
Oh, almost. 2017.
In 2015,
okay. 16, 17, it was $1 million every 2 weeks. It was about the people. And so we ran a company that was about the people. I'm doing the same thing with S3 Recycling Solutions. It's about the people.
So when you walk away with the $20 million, a couple questions I have about that.
It's good.
I assume so.
First question answered.
I'm going to do it again, but way more.
I believe. Yeah. What is the strategy to mitigate taxes? Is that, or you just have to, because it's like ordinary income, right?
No, it's not ordinary income. It's taxed at capital gains. It's capital like gains? Having a stock.
Capital gains tax?
Okay.
So, but see, you go through all that math in your head. When you set the number $20 million or whatever the number you set, you set that number in your head, and then you go through, you meet with your attorney and say, this is what the deal looks like. You meet with your accountant, this is what the deal looks like. And then they tell you at the end of all of that what you're going to have. And then you go to your wife and say, okay, this is what it's going to be, and you realize that you're set. You're like, okay. Now, you can't go out and do stupid stuff, but if you go out and make reasonable investments, you're good. I mean, your kids are good. You make reasonable investments, their kids are good. And so and for me, you know, unlike somebody who gets a big contract to play some sport, I had accumulated over the years all the things that we had wanted. You know what I mean? Yeah. I didn't have to go out and buy another house. We already had a house. I need to go out and buy a car. All the things that we had wanted, lived a pretty simple lifestyle.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a plane this big, but I could have afforded a plane this big, but I didn't.
Right.
And so that's the other thing is stay in your lane. We always stayed in our financial lane. Even though our lane may have been this big, we lived in this part. So even today, I stay in my lane. People say, well, Darryl, why don't you buy a jet? No, it ain't in my lane.
Yeah.
If I bought a jet, I might have to think about the fuel costs. I might have to think about it. The plane I got now, I have to think about it.
And you stayed on after you sold the company as well.
I'm still with them.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, so I had a 2-year earnout, so I signed a 2-year contract with them to be on their team for 2 years. It turned out to be a great relationship because their CEO and me, similar attitudes towards people, that the company's built on people. And so it's a great partnership. So when the 2 years were over, they said, let's do it again. And then 3 years came, they said, let's do it again.
Is it the same CEO that you brought in?
No, this is the CEO of the company that bought my company.
Oh, okay.
Now, the cool part about the people that were on my team, most of them are still there. And they've taken on more responsibility. So when this company went out and bought other companies, they asked my CEO to run those companies.
That's big time.
So it's all about having the right people on your team.
When you had Zycron, and correct me if I'm wrong, did you own the land that the company was on? Or
you know it.
Because that's the other play to it. Because it's like, yeah, you sold the company, but you still own the land.
Yes, and so ZyCrunch spent a number of years, you know, first of all, at the beginning, I couldn't buy anything.
Right.
We were paying, our office space was 150 square feet. Our rent was $150. Then I moved to the Nashville Business Incubation Center where we stayed for 5 years, kind of a low rent incubator, help us grow kind of place. Mm-hmm. Then when we left there, I bought a building in North Nashville over near the projects. And people were like, well, why would you buy over there? I said, because I wanted to be an inspiration to the people in this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so, and plus, I bought the building. It's our building. I'd rather have a place that I own in my neighborhood or our neighborhood than be renting at some 25-story office building in the middle of downtown. I want to own it. Mm-hmm. Where I grew up, my family, there was five families, my mom, her sisters, we were all renters. I don't want to rent.
Right.
I don't want to rent nothing. I don't even want to rent a car. I don't want to rent nothing. And so, yeah, we bought the building, and then we outgrew that building, but I kept it.
Yeah.
And now it's leased. We bought another building. I kept it. The company that bought my company stayed in it for a year, paid me rent for a year. And then, yeah.
That's amazing. That's incredible. Oh, I love it. That's it. That's so, the key.
But I'll tell you a funny story about that building. So they stayed in it for a year, and then I decided it wasn't a good decision. I decided I was going to sell it. So I bought it for $600,000, put $300,000 in it. So now I got $900,000 in it. I decided in 2017, 2018, that I was going to sell that building. I put on the market for $2.4 million, and a guy came and said, I'll give you $2 million for it. Take it or leave it. I didn't like the way he talked to me. I told him to get lost. He talked to me as though I needed to have I needed the money, like mm-hmm. It was a desperate. And then I got to thinking about, man, all these years I've been buying real estate, why should I start selling now? So now, my daughter on vacation at our home in the Bahamas last week, she came up with a new mission statement, which is, the Freemans ain't selling nothing no more, real estate-wise. That's our new mission statement. We ain't selling nothing, real estate-wise. Because real estate, you think about when you have kids and they have kids and they have kids, you can easily pass it down. So yeah. So wherever ZyCrunch was located, mm-hmm. The corporate office, now in our satellite office, we didn't own those spaces.
All right, so in that process, and I'm thinking, when does the Pinnacle Construction Partners come in? Because if you're buying the real estate and maybe you're building it, was that the vision? Like, I'm going to have a construction company in the event that I buy these spaces?
No, Pinnacle Construction Company came out of a large convention center being built in Nashville. I can't think of the year that it was, 2007, 2008. And so me and a friend of mine named Michael Carter, we pursued that opportunity with another company. Mm-hmm. And the other company thought that, you know, they thought that we started the company just to be a part of that build process, to be like their minority partner. And I said, hey, look, I'm not starting any businesses to be a minority partner, mm-hmm. just to be a minority partner. So we didn't win that deal, but we hired a great CEO to run the company. And then, we didn't win that, but we won a whole bunch of other things. And so that business has been in business since 2007, and it's located in our building.
So, yeah, so the Slim and Huskies play, like you said, we talked about this with them, but Ray Kroc and the founders, when he said that McDonald's, when he found, well, somebody enlightened him, like, McDonald's isn't a burger company, it's a real estate company. So can you talk about that just a little bit more, like, as far as how you enlightened the guys and how that's your play, where it's like, even if you sell a business, you still own the real estate, and then the company will have to pay you, so you still make money even if you sell. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so when I met the Slim and Huskies guys, first of all, brilliant people. Process-driven, way more process-driven than me. I mean, these guys are about the nuts and the bolts, the T's and crossing the T's and dotting the I's. These guys are solid. And so when I met him, we started talking. I said, guys, you know, yes, you're in the pizza business, but you're really in the real estate business too, mm-hmm. whether you know that or not. And so why don't we schedule some time to visit my home in the Bahamas? We'll fly down to my plane, talk about your strategy and what it is, and, you know, and come up with a real estate play. And so we did that. And so now we own three buildings, and we've signed long-term leases with the operating company. And so now they're renting from themselves. I mean, and it's a great play. In the event somewhere down the road, 50 years, 100 years, that they sell that company and they still own the real estate, they don't have to sell the real estate. They just sell the company mm-hmm. and continue to get the rental income. So they're making money twice. Right. Making money on the pizza, like McDonald's is making money on the hamburger, and they're making money on the real estate, like McDonald's is making money on the real estate. So when you see a McDonald's franchisee that don't own the real estate, I mean, they're just McDonald's is sending them supplies for burgers to sell so that they can pay McDonald's the rent. I mean, that's huh? I mean that
they have to pay the fee, which is like $1 million, something like that, just to open a franchise, and they have to pay the rent.
And then McDonald's every so many years can come to you and say, hey, we really don't like this location no more. We're gonna shut this location down.
You're out of business.
You're out of business. But if you don't own the real estate, I mean, but if you own the real estate, you can say, okay, McDonald's, you all can go, and I'm going to put something else in here. That's why I like owning everything. Yeah. Everything.
So, talk about that. Triple net lease.
Triple net leases.
What is a triple net lease?
Yeah.
A triple net lease, I'll give you, as I told you guys before when I walked in, I don't talk about anything that I hadn't done. So, triple net lease.
Yeah.
Triple net leases. So, a triple net lease is, for example, I own a couple of Dollar General stores, right?
Mm-hmm.
I own the building. I don't own the operations. I own the building and the land, right? So I signed, at the time, the leases were 12 years, had 12 years remaining with option for another 20 years after the 12. And so in that lease agreement, it says that Dollar General is responsible for the maintenance. So if there's something goes wrong with the building, water line break, you know, roof get damaged, they're responsible for paying that. They're also responsible for paying the taxes. So if the taxes go up from, you know, $10,000 this year to $20,000 next year, they're responsible for the taxes. And they're also responsible for paying the insurance, triple net lease. They're going to pay for the maintenance, the insurance, and the taxes. And what you're going to get every month is a check.
So why would somebody do that? Because it's like, to my brain, that leaves the landlord is not, what is the landlord not responsible for anything?
Nothing. So I'm not responsible for anything.
Why would a tenant do that?
The market allows that. I mean, they all their stores are triple net leases. So when you look at a Walgreens or a Dollar General, a lot of them have triple net leases.
Does location have to play into that process?
Well, and so in the case of Dollar General, they pick their locations where they want to be.
All right.
And oftentimes they'll hire a developer to go build the building, right, where mm-hmm. they want it. And mm-hmm. then an investor like me will come and buy the building from the developer. So Dollar General owns a bunch of, they don't, I'm sorry, they have a bunch of stores that they lease, they don't own.
Mm. So
their model is not like McDonald's.
Yeah. Like even Walmart, I don't think Walmart owns.
No, they just license the name.
Yeah. But you think about this.
No, they don't license the name. They just lease the space.
Lease the space. So, for example, me and some friends co-founded a bank. We started the process in 2004. We opened the bank in 2006. The first two buildings that we built for the bank, we owned them. And so I mean, we put that as a part of the prospectus that some of the board members will own the buildings.
Yeah.
So we owned the buildings for the first several years, and then once we went public, that transaction, we needed to sell the buildings because it looked like we had both our hands in, you know, it didn't look well to the public eye,
yeah.
Because now we became a public company, you know, you don't want to be on the board and getting a check from the bank for rent, and so, but initially when we were private. We owned the buildings, two of the buildings.
So the the CEO of the Dollar Generals that you own is Rod McDaniel?
No. Oh. See, I don't remember.
Yeah. Because
think about this.
Yeah.
I own two Dollar General stores. Mm-hmm. I do nothing with operations.
Okay.
I'm not responsible for anything. Nothing. But going to the mailbox on the 30th to get the checks. When you sign a triple net lease, you're not responsible for anything. So there's the CEO of Dollar General, some man or woman in Nashville that's running, you know, $100 General stores.
Right.
And they're sending a check out to each Dollar General store owner every month. But they're managing the operations.
Yeah, no, so I was saying from the standpoint of, like, when you did that Dollar General deal and even the Slim and Husky things, the people that you're working with are guys that you've been mentoring.
Yes. Sense,
right? And so, yes. And one of the toughest things to do in starting a business is getting funding. And so, like,
yeah, it is.
You kind of, you know, streamline that process by creating Reliant Bank.
Yes.
And so, like, now when you have your mentors and they want to start a business, it's like, hey, I got a place for you guys. Yeah. Can you talk about, like, the thought process behind that and the origin?
So, you know, starting the bank was a unique opportunity. A friend of mine named Farzine, for those in the van, or came to me and said, hey, we're looking at starting a bank. Would you be interested in being involved with it? And I said yes. And they said, this is how much capital you need to have to put into the bank to get, you know, help get it started. And at the time, I think it was a $200,000 initial investment from all the members and minimum. And so I did that. But the cool part about that is when you have influence or ownership or co-founder of a bank, you can make certain things happen. Now, people have got to be credit worthy, but so much in banking has to do with relationships and who you know and understanding the process of how loans are done. Mm-hmm. And so since I've been at Reliant Bank, they've never told me no. So when I was go out and do deals, I knew how to structure the deal to how the bank would like it, and we go out and do deals. And then with my proteges, like the Slim and Husky guys, just walk them into the bank and say, hey, these are good people. These guys are good people. They're going places. They're smart. They know what they're doing. Let's give them a shot.
So after that happens, it's like a board approval and things like that happen?
So each bank works differently, but depending on the size of the bank, you may have an executive loan committee. So it may be me, you, the three of us on the loan committee.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the loan officer. She will bring the loan to us, and we will review it and decide whether or not we're going to fund it or not.
Okay.
But since I am part owner of the bank or co-founder of the bank, I know exactly what they're looking for.
Right.
And I also have one of the five C's of credit, or five C's of banking to get a loan is character. And if I vouch for your character, you may have some deficits in your credit. You may not have any cash or not enough collateral, but if somebody will vouch for your character, that will go a long way. And here's the thing, here's what I tell small business people all the time. Even if you don't have you don't have a loan with a bank, or you don't need a loan with the bank, what you should do at least quarterly, you should have three bankers that you take out to lunch just to get to know them. And just explain to them what your business is. Even if you don't need any money, explain to them what your business is so that you all can get to know each other. Because people do business with whom they like. And for them to like you, they've got to know you. And so banking is very personal. John could call the bank and say, hey, John, hey, this is John. I want you to know my friend Jim is coming to the bank for a loan. He's using his relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I tell young folks who are, even if you're not trying to get a bank relationship, if you're not trying to get a loan, take some time and build a relationship.
That's valuable. Yeah.
So what was the process of you actually, like, developing that bank? Like, was it just a bunch of guys coming together and say, okay, we want to build a bank? Did you buy an existing bank and just renamed it? Like, I'm sure there's a lot of red tape involved.
Yeah, I wasn't the brains behind the bank. I was an investor in the bank. you know, I went through the entire process of getting the charter, helping raise the money, putting the money in, helping to hire the management team. Because to start a bank, you know, you got to go to the state and give them a business plan, and then you got to tell them who you're going to hire, mm-hmm. and then you got to tell them how much money you plan to raise, and then you got to go hire those people, even though you don't have any money. You got to go hire. You got to raise a little bit of money, seed money, to hire the team. And then you go back to the state and say, hey, I've hired this management team. Here are our processes and procedures. And then the state will say, okay, we like your team. We like your processes. You said you're going to raise $20 million. Go back out and get the $20 million, put it in escrow, then come back to us. And all the time, you're paying those people that you've hired, but you hadn't opened the bank yet. Mm-hmm. Then you go back to the state and say, hey, we've got the money we said we were going to raise. It's in escrow. And then the state says, okay, we'll give you a charter to start the bank on, in our case, January 6, 2006. And then it's not that simple, but that's kind of.
Yeah.
But it takes money.
Yeah. That's a fact. So outside of everything else that you named, I know you're a stock investor as well.
Yes.
So you was telling us that you bought Apple at a crazy price years ago.
We have to
screenshot. I showed you that.
We're going to have to screenshot it. Yeah.
I'll show you that.
Yeah. It's real, y'all.
Yeah. So can you talk about that, as far as, like, I know you said you're a value long-term investor, but how important is it to diversify and not put all your eggs in one basket? And, yeah, can you talk about, like, what inspired you to purchase Apple in 2007?
It was 2007. Yeah, I got it on my phone.
I got it in my mind. Yeah. It was 3,000 shares.
Actually, we were on vacation in France.
Yep, and that's what you said.
Family was asleep, and I was up on the computer buying stock. But I like buying stock in companies that I see in use all the time. You all talked about this. I mean, if you're on your Apple phone all the time, mm-hmm. and you don't own Apple. That's a problem. I mean, if you got Amazon boxes stacked all over your house and you don't own Amazon, that's a problem. And I don't own Amazon, but if you're using Nike shoes and Nike this, Nike that, so I try to buy companies that I see people using all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Facebook. I'm an investor in Facebook. Then I'm an investor in some. We talked about some dividend stocks, but. I try to buy things that I see people using all the time. And so I may do a little deep due diligence, a little research, but if I see people on their Apple all the time.
Was that your best? Because you said you bought it at $5. $5.
$5. So
was that your greatest stock investment?
No, Zicron was. I told you I put $2,000 in and got $2 billion back. Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah, that was
the Apple is probably the best.
To have a $5 cost basis in Apple.
Yes.
Because, I mean, what is it at? One something now? But that's not really the true price, because it's split.
Split a few times.
So Apple's at, you could really say it's like almost $450 probably if you would have taken away the split.
Yeah.
So to have $5 cost basis at $450
value.
Not only
do I have it, my wife has it.
Yeah.
And my four kids have it.
Right. So that's part of the story too. It was like, yeah. You didn't just buy it.
I didn't just buy it for me.
I got the memory. You said it was 3,000 shares in the photo. It was like, yo, you bought some for you. You bought some for your wife. Yeah. You bought some for your four kids. It's like,
of course.
And you've gone through two splits, not just one.
I've gone through a bunch of splits.
My God.
Gone through a bunch of splits. And so.
Generational.
Yeah. And so, and that's how I look at every transaction I do. I look at it through a generational lens. So the first thing I asked you guys when I first came in here, you know, what's your plans? Mm-hmm. I look at it through a generational lens, because at some point, you need to exit. You need to exit.
Mm-hmm.
And so being an entrepreneur is like being at a crap table. And you're doing well. You got all your chips stacked up real high. Everybody sees your chips. It's, oh, yeah, man. Those guys are doing great. Got a new Range Rover.
How do you know that?
You know, those guys are doing great. The chips are stacked up. But until you do this, you hadn't really won. Because you have seen people at the crap table whose chips are stacked up.
That's a fact. Shout out to Mike.
That's a fact.
Whose chips are stacked. And they didn't do this. and they COVID lost. Hit.
Yeah.
Or 2008 hit. Or something happens. And so that's why you got to plan the exit.
So let me ask you this, as far as, especially like for being a black business owner, a lot of times people feel like there's two sides to the coin. It's like if we always sell our businesses, we don't have the legacy brands of the Walmarts and we can't build those names.
You do know Walmart sold.
Did they? Well, they're publicly
yes, trading. So right, they right, sold. Right, 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 right.
But
they,
but
they took cash. They took a bunch of chips off the table.
They did, but the kids still have a large stake.
But they sold.
But the big question is how do you feel about that? Like, cause I have no problem with it. Like I said, I've heard that from other people, like that, especially black businesses, that maybe it's not the best idea to sell because
it was a great idea for me.
Okay.
Yeah, it ain't personal. Yeah, and I didn't have a black
you
business.
You can't have a...
I had a great business that happened to be owned by a black guy.
Okay.
And so, in as a father of four, happily married man, when you look at your... You talked about diversification. When you look at your nest egg, and it's 90% in one company, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's dangerous. And so, my chips were stacked, and I didn't want something to happen. I didn't want to go out and hire another team to take me to 100 million. And so business is not personal. And we got to quit thinking of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to do a great job. You want to hire great people, provide them great opportunities. But at some point, you need to exit.
Yeah.
Because most of us go out of business.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
Think about it. So people came to me and said, man, I can't believe you sold your company. Why'd you sell it? I said $23 million.
Got 23 million reasons.
But here's the deal.
Yeah.
Some people came and said, "Why did you sell it?" And then some other folks came and said, "How did you sell it?"
There's a difference.
How did you do it? That's my question. How did you do it? Not why did you do it. It's very obvious. I started a company, $2,000, $23 million evaluation. What would you do?
What are we talking about?
That's not talking about. That's not even a question.
What are we talking about?
I had one lady, she was all over me. She said, well, why did you do it? I mean, black owned company and blah, blah, blah. And I just said, $23 million.
Need I say more?
What part of this do you not understand?
So, Zachron.
One more thing.
Yeah.
So, when I got to when the company was at $16 million and I realized I wasn't the person to take it to the next level. And I did a search to find the best person to run the company. It was a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I hired a white guy to run this company. Now, my COO at the time was black. My CFO was black. My VP of sales was white. So I had a diverse team of folks. Mm-hmm. But people ask me, why did you hire the white guy to run your company? Because he's the best. He's the best. If you got a chance to hire Bill Gates to come run your company, would you say, no, I'm not going to hire Bill because he's white? No. Hire the best people, period. And if you do that, and I tell white people this, and I tell black people this, if you hire the best people, you're going to get diversity. That's going to happen. Look at sports. They go out and find the best people. That's why you got diversity. You find the guys from all overseas coming to play ball here. You're going to get diversity. And so I had a diverse team because my focus was on quality. So a couple stupid questions over the years for me, well, why'd you hire the white guy? Because he's the best. And look what happened. We won a championship. And you still trying to figure out how you're going to make your next move.
That's
there you have it. Yeah. So the four phases of business, this is interesting. You said the idea, the startup phase, the run and grow, and then the sell. So because I think a lot of times most people, they just start a business and it's like they don't really have any plan of like – so like when you met us, you're like, what's your plan? Like how you plan on selling this? Like, and a couple people have actually asked me that before. So do you think what's your advice for business owners that's just starting or maybe just already like – as far as like reevaluating and having those four.
So
Start with the end in mind.
Okay.
Start with the end in mind. Where do you want this to be? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're building a house, you got a vision of what you want that house to be. Start with that in mind. Start with what you want that business to be. Start with, you know, who do I want this business to, what company do I want this company to be like? Oftentimes what we do is we create jobs for ourselves. Our business is, it's a job for us. I mean, if we don't go to work that next day, nothing happens. Most of us start businesses, most businesses just have one person working for it, the owner. So start with, a friend of mine named Scott Sorce says, start with how soon can you replace yourself and hire a bunch of good people? Start with that. Start with the understanding that you ain't the best person for the job. Start with there's 7 billion people in the world. I guarantee there's somebody better than you to do it. Start with, let's build it around the people. Start with, in my company, I would never sit at the end of the table, or the board table. Start with shrinking yourself so small that the people around you can perform, that you don't overshadow them. Start with stretching them and pushing them out front. And they ain't got to be in the media and say, oh, yeah, under Daryl's leadership and under Daryl's leadership. So my team knew not to ever do that. Mm. It was all about them.
Yeah, so can we go to – and that's a lot of valuable advice. Can we talk about
S3 Recycling
Solutions? Yeah, because I'm listening to you say that, and I'm thinking, like, so what's the vision for this? Because this
you
is...
know the vision. Is. 8 to 14.
So we're growing this business, and obviously the valuation, so with obviously the payout's going to be bigger when we sell this.
So you asked me before we started, you know, tell me not to hit the table, sorry. you asked me, why do I invest in business? And I have a philosophy, and that philosophy is, I bet on the jockey, not the horse. I bet on the jockey, because there are some people who are winners, regardless of the situation you put them in, they're going to find a way to win. There's some folks that you know, you're like, man.
Ow.
He won again.
Yeah, he did.
She won again. So I bet on the jockey, not the horse, S3 Recycling Solutions. I met this young African-American CEO at the time. He was 28. They had $400,000 in revenue, 4 employees. And I said, man, he's good. And I could mentor him. He knows the industry. He had a 7,000 square foot warehouse. 7,000. Small for recycling.
Mm-hmm.
So I invested about 20% of the company. And I went back and bought another 31% of the company. And I went back and bought another. Now I own 65% of the company. He owns a percentage and a couple other guys. But I'm the majority shareholder of the company. I needed to get majority ownership so that when I spoke in the boardroom, people would listen.
Mm-hmm. So, this guy's different.
So, but he was good. And so today, in mentoring him over the last 4 years, it's gone from $400,000 in sales to now it's about a $2.5-3 million company. From 7,000 square feet that we were renting, you know, I would never rent it.
That's the quote.
I came, we're no longer renting. Mm-hmm. We bought a 75,000 square foot warehouse.
7,000 to 75,000.
7,000 to 75,000. Our warehouse is bigger than a football field. Mm. We have signed 4 or 5 Fortune 500 companies to be our customers during COVID. Since March, the company has no debt outside of the debt for the real estate. No operational debt and lots of cash. He is killing it. And everybody needs IT recycling and medical equipment recycling.
Yeah, in my mind when I was...
Every corporation needs that. And he's the only one in that space that looks like him. And so why can't I push him to the top?
So where are you at now as far as your career? I know you have the charitable foundation, like your family foundation.
Yes.
Like at this point in your life, are you more focused on still building businesses or helping people or a combination of like what's your 20-year plan starting today?
I told you that I have several proteges, and I tell all of them, if I can't help you add $1 million or $2 or $3 million to your personal financial statement, or if I can't help you make $1 million or $2 million, I shouldn't be your mentor. We should just be friends. We should just be drinking buddies. So my goal is to create a bunch of millionaires. That's my goal. I got a friend in Nashville who created, so he created so many millionaires we can't even count them, including myself. He helped with me. My goal is to create a whole bunch of millionaires. That's my goal. The other thing, as it relates to charity, my wife and I, we've donated at least $500,000 to various charities. Next year, I'm going to step my charity game up. And why does that mean something? I want to be winning in giving. I want to be winning in giving because I grew up poor. And I know there are a bunch of people that need help. And so why do I keep investing in businesses? To help to make money and help people grow. But also, it gives me more dollars to give to charities. It gives me a chance to be more charitable. And so I got a friend named DaCosta Jenkins, and I talk with DaCosta all the time. Say, hey, man, my charity games, I gotta kick it up. And so.
So you've had, illustrious career, a lot of success, but there has been some failures. And so,
yes,
can we talk about the American Addiction Center and some of the biggest lessons we've learned from that?
American Addiction Centers took that company public with a group of folks in October 2014. Very tough space. It was in vogue during that period of time. And then as insurance companies changed, as reimbursements changed, it was devastating to the business. And so in that transaction, I think I lost between $1.5 million and $2 million. And so that's my point. You got to get in and get out. But we had a bunch of opportunities. There were a bunch of opportunities back then when things are in vogue to get out. And so, but just it's a tough business. And there ended up being a bunch of addiction center companies that went out of business. So I learned a lot from that. I have learned more from when the businesses that I've been involved with are not doing well. I learned more during that period of time than when they're doing great. Because when everything is great, you don't have to look under the covers. You don't have to check the engine. It's great. But when things aren't going well, you got to dig in and find out where you're losing money, find out where you're not efficient. And so American Addiction Centers was a great concept, but I lost a ton of money in it. Didn't hurt though. It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, you have it, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a pleasure. How can the people follow you on social media? I know you got a YouTube series where you actually interview people on the
When are you guys gonna come up in the plane with me?
Let's schedule it.
So I have a cockpit conversations where I take people up who are successful. We talk about business concepts. We may talk about real estate. I even take people up who are in corporate America, C-level folks, to talk about how they got to where they are. Just some inspirational stories that gives me a chance to fly my plane and interview great folks. And then I'm on Instagram, Darrell S. Freeman Sr. And I also do a thing called OG Free Game Friday.
Yeah, I saw that. Nice cards, by the way.
OG Free Game Friday. And that's, I've learned a lot because people have poured a lot into me. I'm not a real smart person. I've had some success, but it's because of people who've taken interest and said, hey, I'm going to help you. And so I use the internet and I use cockpit conversations to whatever they poured in me that has some value to be able to put it back out into the space. And so I like doing it. And I admire what you all are doing. Because you bring some real nuggets and you bring some real meaningful information.
Keep
up the good work.
Yeah, I told you that when we met downstairs. I'm like, I've known people my whole life and they know what we're doing and have never reached out to say anything. And you heard one episode and like, I can guarantee once a month, you're going to send me something inspirational, whether it's you in the cockpit or it's you on the island.
Let me give you the real stuff next time. I think you can handle, man.
We're going to be in the picture together next time.
Okay, all right. You should come down to the island, man.
Yeah, we got to come.
We'll take my plane down.
We got to come.
Get on my boat. I don't rent the boat either.
Bahamas?
Yeah, Bahamas.
I own the boat.
I got pictures.
I wouldn't expect anything less. I wouldn't expect anything less. Paradise Island, I'm on my way.
Whoa, not Paradise Island.
Exuma.
Island is nice, but we're gonna take you a little.
Okay,
farther
I've been
south.
I've been
to
Nassau.
We're gonna take you a
little
farther south. All right. And you look here, man. When you fly with me, you gotta take your shoes off.
No TSA.
Straight to the cliff.
We're gonna drive the car right up to the plane.
I'm ready, man. Yeah. I'm ready. If we didn't have Market Mondays tonight, I would be on my way right now.
Yeah.
I appreciate.
Plane's right out there.
Don't tip me with a good time. I definitely appreciate it. I'm sure the audience appreciates it as well. It's always good to get firsthand information from people that have experience and have done it. And there's no better way to learn than to actually learn from somebody, as opposed to like doing it in theory, like you actually did it in real life. So, thank you for joining us, and thank you for just being generous. Cause it's another form of charity as well. It's like, you know, being generous, you don't have to fly to give free information. So that's a form of mentorship and definitely a way of giving back. So appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, mentor.
I tell you what, I'm humbled to be here. Thank you. I mean, you guys are awesome. I appreciate you.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Troy, housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. Y'all know that's our Proud to Pay program. Everybody that's been supporting, we greatly appreciate it. Y'all know Tier 5 members. Y'all get access to EYL University, the number one online school in the world. That is a big fact. So shout out to the earners that are there. And shout out to everybody that's been supporting the merch. We greatly appreciate it. We got some new stuff on the way.
Yeah, so thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.